heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation. And now, Malcolm.
Well, you have to first consider that approximately 80% of all searches are done on the Google platform. Now, this is both for political news, personal and product information. I mean, in fact, it's like one of those brands, like when you go to get a Kleenex and you blow your nose and it's not ever a Kleenex or Band-Aid. Google's the same thing. It's like first into a market entry, and then it becomes known as you're going to Google it. That means you're going to go search, of course. Of course, there are other options out there beside Google. I mean, there's a few of them. There's a litany of them, actually. And there are some that are more private than public, as Google is. But you get the point. I mean, first into a product category, and you essentially can own that product. You become branded in that, and that's what Google is today. I mean, it is exactly, I'm going to go Google it. Everybody knows that. They say it, I mean, no matter what you say, they don't say I'm going to go Bing it. You don't Bing it. You Google it, and you don't DuckDuckGo it. You Google it. You see, that's what's happened there. That's the brand. That's the Band-Aid. That's the Kleenex. That's what we got. We rely on Google for all kinds of things. And, of course, we rely on technology for everything to run our lives here. It's safe to say, people, that we've become not just reliant, but addictive to these tech services. I mean, let's face it. They've changed the way we do business on both a professional and a personal level. And more than that, even, they've changed the way we communicate and the way we find vital information that both run our lives and that go into important decisions we make on a daily basis, a moment-by-moment basis. We Google it. We want to go find some particular retailer. We Google it. We want to know what a particular politician said, or is it, we Google it. And that is essentially the power of Google. I want to talk to you today about this Google thing. There's a lot more to this story, and you need to pay attention to this talk we're going to have today, because we got a couple of brilliant guys coming on. We could talk about technology all day long, but I want to stay really about this Google thing, because it really is a front to everything we are about and what and our concerns, what we should, why we should be concerned, and why we may want to change the way we do business and the way we interact with Google. Now, I'm not sure if you've seen this video that was leaked by Breitbart News. Again, it was leaked by an anonymous source. I love those. Of course, the video is real, and you know it's real because you can see all the Google leadership, their management, the founders, everybody's in that video. And they're all talking. This was after the 2016 presidential election. Now, people, if you really want to know, we can talk and hyperventilate all day long, and we can bitch and gripe and moan and complain, which is what the right does very well against the left. We complain about everything they own, everything they do, and everything they are, but we fail to often bring action to the table, which is what I remind you of all the time. And this is a classic today of this, by the way. This video, if you haven't seen it, it is truly a game changer, because, listen, in order to understand the problem, please follow this now. You've got to dive into the problem. You've got to look at the core of the problem, people. You've got to go. You have to go there. You've got to get up to that 35,000 feet. You've got to really look back and really look at the problem. Now, many of you out there don't do that. Because we, again, in a social media environment that we have, we complain, we bitch, we gripe, that's the typical. And nothing ever gets changed, nothing ever gets done, because we don't really understand what's going on. We just know that Google is doing bad things. But why are they doing bad things? Who are these people exactly? What's behind all of this? I mean, those are real questions. Those are reasonable questions we need to ask ourselves, people. So this video that was leaked again, the Breitbart News put out there, to me, it's a game changer. And yet there's been little about this, really, quite frankly. But let's start here. And now, I'm going to ask you today to follow me carefully, please, because this will change your view, your ideas, your thoughts. This will probably change your relationship with Google as well, and other tech companies, by the way, or it should at least. So let's start here with this Google co-founder, Sergey Brin. You know the name. Well, he compares Trump supporters to fascists and says they are extremists who are motivated by boredom and need a better quality of governance and decision-making. Now, of course, Sergey is, he's the king of all this, so he knows. He's telling the movement that they're bored and they need a better quality of governance and decision-making. Now, I don't know what makes him the king, but he thinks he knows better than the electorate as to what is a better quality of governance. It's his way of governance. So what is his way of governance? You have to begin to start to ask yourself, what is this man really up to? And what is his idea as a very powerful person behind Google? Well, in that video now, Vice President for Global Affairs, Kent Walker, he argues that Google should fight to ensure the populist movement is merely a hiccup in a historical arc that bends toward progress. Now, listen to these words carefully here. And here's the other thing. When you watch these videos, you don't always focus on all the words they're saying. So what I've got here is a complete transcript of the video I'm talking to you about. So you can really understand the words. I want the words to penetrate your brain. I want you to understand what they're saying here. So this, again, is the VP for Global Affairs, Kent Walker. So he's arguing that Google should fight to ensure the populist movement is merely a hiccup in a historical arc that bends toward progress. What does that mean? Let me translate that for you. It's just a minor hiccup so we can get back to our old ways of creating a globalist environment for all because we know what's better for them. That's the translation of that bends towards progress and the historical hiccup, you see? Now, Walker also said supporters of the populist causes like the Trump campaign are motivated by fear, xenophobia, hatred, and a desire for answers that may or may not be there. Again, these people are, they are the, these are the superiors to the globe. These are the superior people that know what's best for you and what's best for your family. These are the people right here. So again, that co-founder, Sergey Brin, he states that the weekly meeting is probably not the most joyous we've had. Now, this happens in the video about 20 some odd seconds in of that video. This was a real meeting that was had after the election, after Trump had won. Okay, so he says it's probably not the most joyous we've had and that, you know, most people here are pretty upset and pretty sad. Now, the emotions and the body language in this meeting are over the top. You can't imagine this. If you have not seen this, you've got to see it. Go search for the Breitbart video of Google and pour yourself a cocktail. So Brin, he comes out, he contrasts the disappointment of Trump's election with his excitement at the legalization of cannabis in California. And of course, the people there at the Google start laughing and, you know, they're clapping. Hoo-hoo! We can get high now legally. Whoa, whoa. I mean, so then you got to ask yourself, what is the purpose of all that really? Why do these senior executive founders, multi-billionaires, why do they find that, you know, what the electorate wants is not important, but making sure everybody is high and out of their flipping minds is very important? Why do you think that is, people? Why do you think that is? I mean, that's a hell of a statement if you break that apart, I have to tell you, huh? So then he says, returning to seriousness, like he had stopped being serious for a moment there, you know? Yeah, really. We get it, Brin. It's okay. He says that he is deeply offended. He is deeply offended. Sergey Brin is deeply offended, people. You hear that? Deeply offended by the election of Trump and the election conflicts with many of Google's values. And there is the gotcha moment, Google's values. So what is Google's values, and why is Google pushing their values onto the American electorate? Why is that? Why are Google's values so important that we have to digest Google's values? Who the hell is Google? Who are they exactly, people? It conflicts with many of Google's values. So we are deeply offended by this election of Trump And we don't really care what the electorate wants or what they say, but we're offended. And this guy doesn't meet our values. And this is a real problem for us. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. So they go on in the video and they try to explain the motivations of Trump supporters. Senior Vice President for Global Affairs, Kent Walker, he says, fear, not just in the United States, but around the world, is fueling concerns, xenophobia, hatred, and a desire for answers. Again, that may or may not be there. And you have to love that statement. Because again, yeah, Trump was an unknown. He was different. He wasn't part of their establishment. So you bet they were running with fear, especially the people, as I stated to you previously, that had bones buried. And we talked about that the other day. All those people that, you know, where the bones are buried in Washington, those people who didn't know what to do with the bones, started to dig those bones up and start to move them around a little bit, which is what you got going, which is why they're all running a bit scared these days as to what's happening here. It's like when you go into a room, people, at home, in a dark, dark room. And if you're in the South somewhere, you turn the light on, you're liable to see a few cockroaches run quickly, right? Or they call them in the South, the palmetto bugs. You can put a saddle on them and ride them, potentially, they say. But they run like hell when you turn the light on. They don't know what the hell to do. That's basically what you got in Washington. Same thing, people. Yeah. And so Walker goes on to describe the Trump phenomenon as a sign of tribalism. Tribalism that's self-destructive in the long term. Now, this is because these people know better. This is the Vice President for Global Affairs, Kent Walker, the esteemed Kent Walker. Tribalism, self-destructive, long-term problems. Right? We have a problem here. Yet, you know, in our world of our constitutional republic, we call that an election, Walker. We don't call that quite tribalism, but it is called an election. You see, that's the elections, yeah? Elections have consequences, they say. And this is his version, is he calls it tribal. So every 2 years and every 4 years, Walker must think we have a tribalism movement in the United States of some sort. Oh, another tribalism movement. They're voting for somebody again, these damn people in the tribe. Maybe he needs to go back and take another political science class here about what the hell an election is, potentially, you know? So trying to explain the motivations of these Trump supporters, the senior VP, Walker, he says, fear, not just in the United States again, but around the world, I love that statement, is fueling these concerns. And I love the whole tribalism thing. It just tells you a whole lot. Well, Eileen Naughton, she's the vice president, Eileen Naughton, affectionately called Eileen Naughty. She's the vice president of people operations. She promises that Google's policy team in D.C., Center for Swamp Hell, is all over the immigration issue, and the company will keep a close watch on it. Now, what does that mean exactly, people? That statement makes me a little nervous. I get a few little goosebumps on me when the powerful, the most powerful company, arguably, in the world, is now telling us that, you know, our policy team is all over, and I put in quotes here, people, those are her words, not mine, all over. Are you hearing those words? All over the immigration issue. So what exactly are they doing, and how are they all over that? I mean, that should make you a little nervous, too. And so the company will keep a close watch on it. That comes back to the whole algorithms conversation, people. We're going to keep a close watch on that because we're all over this issue because we don't like it. That's where they get in the back room and they tighten up those algorithms. It's like they put your you-know-what in a vise and squeeze it, right? Ow! That hurts. Bet your ass it hurts, yeah. So, Naughton jokes about Google employees asking, can I move to Canada after the election? Now, she goes on to seriously discuss the options available to Google employees who wish to leave the country. Of course, none of these people ever leave the country, but they love to talk about it. And the celebritars in the West Coast, they also talk about it all the time. None of them ever leave. I mean, I'd like to create a public fund to, you know, but they got to sign a contract first never to come back, you know. But I'd be happy to get a public fund for that and create a not-for-profit of some sort, raise some money for these cats to get them the hell out. That would be a victory, I'll tell you, for tribalism, wouldn't it be now, huh? Well, Norton acknowledges a diversity of opinion and political persuasion and notes that she has heard from conservative Google employees who say they haven't felt entirely comfortable revealing who they are and urge tolerance. I always love the word tolerance, people. So love tolerance, that's another great word to use for this sort of a thing. And so she's saying to the conservatives, again, these are the people who are running around fearful of the cockroaches, and they run from the cockroaches because they don't quite know what to do or where those cockroaches are headed or how big the cockroaches are. So they run like hell the other way. You see, that's the conservatives. They run from the cockroaches. The problem is cockroaches have the power, you see, is the problem there. So you see what's going on there. And then and some of these conservatives have come out since and have been fired or left or disbarred from Google because they didn't fit into their system there that Sergey Brin wants. And they're part of the tribalism movement. Tribalism, when you really break this talk down, people, and you look at this, when Brin compares the Trump voters to extremists, arguing for a correlation between the economic background of Trump supporters and the kinds of voters who back extremist movements, he said voting is not a rational act, and that not all of Trump's support can be attributed to income disparity. You see, this guy's got it all figured out, people. He's got it all figured out. And of course, you remember he talked about the boredom early on, you know, and linking them to, you know, some sort of a tribalism movement and sort of sneaks up sometimes. Really bad things, he said, can happen here. And so to end this little video, which is really, as I say, one you got to watch and watch it a couple, three times. But at least you got some of the words now that I told you in here. And they went on to offer consultation and depression classes and everything else, psychological massages and everything else they could offer to the masses there at Google, people. Wow. And then, you know, you have to then ask yourself, right? Well, and this is where we go to get all of our search information. It's where we go to get all of our emails. They can dive into your email account anytime they want. If you've got a Gmail account, you are really Google's bitch at that point. You see, if you got a Gmail account, that's what you are. You become Google's bitch, basically. And oh, there's millions of Gmail accounts out there. Clearly, you may want to get another one or something. I don't know, unless you're comfortable with being their bitch. I'm not sure, but you know, there's some problems here with the whole technology stuff, people. Google's only the tip of an iceberg here. But let's just say we're in trouble here. And the serious question I want to pose today to you, as we bring on two really great talents here in just a moment, here is: why is the right sleeping through all this, like a Rip Van Winkle bad episode there? And why do the far left socialists own all the tech companies? I continue to ask you. That's a tough one, isn't it, people?
Listen to Malcolm, the voice of a nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
As we say, let the silent voices be heard. Shadow banning, editing, censorship, blocking, and adherence to political correctness are seen as serious threats to our God-given right to free speech. Suppressing free speech, the very cornerstone of our society, is not in the best interest of our listeners, readers, and those who provide our content. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue: Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store.
So let's talk now about this. Yeah, let me bring on here Michael Johns. Michael is the national co-founder and leader of the Tea Party movement. He's a former White House speechwriter and a policy analyst with the Heritage Foundation. Michael is a big voice and has a lot to say out there, as well as Dennis Santiago. Dennis is really an American strategist, a patriot. He focuses on strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, global stability. These are thinkers today. Michael and Dennis, these are out-of-the-box thinkers. But again, as we're talking about Google, and we're talking about the fact that they run this entire platform, they run the Gmails, they run all the searches, they Google Drive. I mean, they're in your life. How concerned should we be, Michael, in regards to Google? How concerned should America be after that video leaked that Google never thought would see the sunshine of daylight? Yeah.
So the video was so hugely important because it was really, I think, the first opportunity to witness up front how monolithic their ideological thinking is, how exclusionary they are to opposing viewpoints, how little they understand about opposing viewpoints. Meaning this wasn't, they depict conservatives in that video in ways that are not real, that are not accurate. And that's a product of living a life that by and large has inoculated them from the, what is in essence, the largest political ideology in the country. And to answer your question, we should be very concerned on a whole bunch of levels. Number one is that that video, along with a whole bunch of other examples of their actions and words, reveals that this is a large company, and I think 15th largest company in the on the Fortune 500 list, $136 billion in revenue last year, with a political agenda that is not necessarily, in fact, not at all, aligned with mainstream American thinking. That's issue one. Issue two, I think, is that just on the classic like antitrust basis, which of course is a, you know, the role of the federal and sometimes state governments in ensuring that one company does not develop monopolistic power within an industry that basically breaks up the traditional competitiveness of a free market economy, you see all of the indications that Google is amassing that sort of power. So I think it's now incumbent upon federal government and state governments to look at antitrust provisions. And in fact, they are actually doing that. So that's encouraging that the government seems to recognize the disproportionate power that this company holds within this vital industry sector. And then finally, an issue we've talked about before that I believe is one of the most important of our lifetimes. This is a company that has worked that does not work closely at all with the Trump administration, despises the Trump administration, but absolutely loves the government in Beijing and is engaged in all sorts of sensitive, collaborative research into artificial intelligence and helping them develop internet access that is restrictive and in line with their political agenda of this totalitarian country. So I think you kind of look at it, here's a company that is suppressing, repressing, and deeply biased against conservatives. Here's a company that's developing monopolistic power within its industry. Here's a company that doesn't work with the U.S. government, but is very comfortable with the government of Beijing. All those things suggest that you got a real serious issue with Google and their ownership company called Alphabet.
Can you believe the audacity of this dude to suggest the fact that we have elected a president that we are now considered tribalism, in his view, that it's no longer an election, but that it is his version of tribalism because he doesn't agree with those philosophies? Can you believe the audacity of this guy?
No, just incredible. And, you know, let me just draw on my private sector experience. I mean, I've worked in management capacities in three Fortune 1000 companies. Mm-hmm. And you would never have seen in those corporate environments, and I'm quite confident you would not see in any corporate environment, that kind of discussion that was, it didn't even have to be like, here's how you should potentially be viewing this election from a company standpoint. It was just understood that everyone in that view held the same view. And in fact, you cited a few great examples of it, but you have the CFO of the company, Ruth Porat, got up and broke into tears in front of everyone. They had a group hug.
Yeah,
you used the phrase. They called the election, as you correctly said, deeply offensive. There was just you see there that they do not understand conservatism. They view conservatism as an absolute alien, evil ideology, and they are absolutely committed to suppressing and repressing access to conservative ideas. And that just is, I've never seen that magnitude of monolithic political thinking in any executive suite of a Fortune 1000 company. And even if they had shared my ideological viewpoints, which obviously they don't, I would have found that equally, I would have found that terrifying too. I just don't think that is the role of a private sector entity to be engaged in such transparent political activism.
Yeah. No, and that's
outside of their industry sphere, meaning every company has sort of regulatory issues and maybe tax issues, and they have a public policy agenda that might be aligned with their company's best interests and their customers' best interests. But this is a company that has a position on just about every issue under the sun, and issues that aren't immediately related to an internet search company at all.
And the problem with all of that is they're an integral part of our life, that like we use them every day, or most everybody does. I mean, they're a big part of it here. And this, what Michael puts out there, is really just the tip of an iceberg today, which is why I wanted to stay on Google today, people, because I really want to do this justice today, to have this conversation. And before we get to the antitrust, let me open it up here, Dennis, with you, and then say this here. When Michael just talked about, they literally did have a group hug in that meeting. They literally got together. I think it was the VP of finance or somebody said, let's all hug each other right now. I mean, this is the equivalent to a safe space that they talk about for the far left radical socialist Marxist group here. This would be it right here. This is the poster child for this entire movement right here. But the problem is we're talking about technology here. We're talking about Google. And this is a big problem. So the question back to you, Dennis, is how concerned should Americans be that this, when you look at this video and we've exposed what we've exposed and talked about, that Google is, that they have these viewpoints and that they're considering us all tribalism, should we not be concerned?
Well, Malcolm, I'm going to go probably about as opposite from this conversation as it's possible to be, because As that very video was being made in my own home, I was listening to exactly the same thing from my beloved wife. The pain of the 2016 election was a real shock to people that had to come face to face with the reality that the rest of the country had a different view from where they thought the world was going, and it shocked them deeply. I look at videos like that going, that's 2 years ago. And I look back at it and I say to myself, yeah, that's exactly what I would have expected these people to be reacting to in that way, at that moment, with that much emotion, because they were completely unprepared for what had just happened. And it goes on today. 2 years later, if you keep reading up on what has happened at Google in the time since that video was made, they have numerous reports of people coming in and out of that company that continue to report that the schism internally among the staff of people who are on one side or the other of the political debate that we continue to deal with in the United States, they continue to have schisms, and that company is continuing to have to try to figure out how to basically run a company that has both kinds of people in it. And they're continuing to have problems, as are the rest of us in the world. So, from the point of view of saying, hey, these people are monolithically evil forever. Nah, I don't buy that, man. I buy that you're looking at a point in time, and you have a progression of emotion that is about to get peaked up again because there's an election coming. Now, that's my viewpoint on that. We'll talk about antitrust and totalitarianism and stuff a little bit later. But, I understand the pain these people had, and I'm not going to denigrate it.
Yeah. So I guess the question that initially came to my mind as you were saying that was that, so let's flip the cards around just a quick moment, please, and keep the conversation real. Let's say in 2016, Hillary Clinton had indeed won that election for real, and she was the president of the United States, clearly. And so then what if the right had, would they have had the same viewpoint? Would they have gone to the same level? And the bigger question is, Dennis, that, you know, which is what I posed, why is the right sleeping and why do the far left socialists own all the tech companies? Because the right doesn't own the Googles. They don't own any of those, the Facebooks, the Twitters, the Apples. They don't own any of it. And so that's all owned by the far left. And you seem to think they have an innocent agenda.
I don't think that the people that own this stuff today have an innocent agenda. I think
what you said was a moment in time back then at the election. Philosophy, Dennis. It's their ideology. It's their DNA. It's their blood.
Yeah. If you will remember, you know, you have a guest on this program that started the Tea Party movement, which was a reaction to another point in time where a Democrat took power in this country. All right. I mean, you know, that's the way we are. Americans are reactive. You don't value the fact that the pendulum swings back and forth in this country, and that's how we stay.
But they don't run our technology companies, Dennis. You can have a difference of opinion and be argumentative in all of this, but they don't run our technology companies, and they don't change the programming. Google owns YouTube. They own the Alphabet Group. They own a lot. Yeah, and they're running the entire apparatus.
Yeah, Malcolm, you know how Google got here? It's because all the other companies that were around when I started working on the internet died, okay? When this thing started, you used a Netscape search engine, and then you had Yahoo, and then you had Alta Vista, and all of these companies.
It's the same with Facebook. Same with Facebook. MySpace died, and all that, and they sucked up that energy.
Yeah, you know why? Because they had bad business models. It just so happens that these guys had the one business model that worked.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah. Well, that may be, but we're still. You don't find it devious the way they have these agendas in their private little safe space meetings, and yet they don't put this out there to the public, and these videos were never supposed to see the light of day, yet they show how biased they are, and you don't have a problem with that?
No, I don't, because I also see the bias that's in other sectors of this country as people water cooler talk what's going on. And you know what? And I actually like the fact that you have these little cells in this country that have very, very varied opinions and get pretty heated up about it, because I think that's healthy for this country.
What about the damage they can do to the electorate? What about the damage they can do, which they're doing through the search? There is so much evidence right now. You know, the biggest thing I would disagree with you on, where you made light of the fact that you brushed over it and said it was a moment in time. I couldn't disagree more with that, as much as I'm breathing right this moment here. It was not a moment in time. I totally disagree with you. 1 million gazillion bazillion percent, sir.
That's why I like doing this show.
Yeah, but it was not a moment in time. It was not. This is who they are. It is their breathing apparatus. It is their bloodstream. It's their DNA. There was no moment in time there, Dennis. You're misaligned with that statement here. It's who they are, and that's never going to change. But the point is, don't you think they put the blinders on the American people? They didn't divulge any of this information. They didn't tell anybody. And right now what's happening is they are censoring and stopping. I know, because YouTube won't allow us to monetize. At America Out Loud, we cannot monetize with YouTube at all. We cannot play their game. They stopped us doing that a couple of years ago. I don't even worry about it. I don't play with them. They're evil, evil people that are trying to censor the speech of the right and trying to, they're violating our constitutional freedoms here. And what right do they have to play God, judge, jury, and the whole bit here? They don't have a right.
Ah, not, and that's where here's where it gets starts to get interesting. Okay, so the interesting thing here is when it comes to the you are seeing in this country right now a control over content, not just Google, but you know Walmart taking guns out of the stores. You're seeing a lot of corporate action that is going on here now that is basically changing how business America is presented to the public. and there is a degree of censorship that is going on. Here's what I find very interesting about that. If you look at the way the antitrust law is put together in this country, there's structural antitrust that has to do with how they make money. I'm not really sure that that anybody has a case against these companies on that side of it, because verticality is presumed to be a good thing. But here's where it gets interesting for companies like Google, Walmart, the mainstream media. In it, if you start to carve out content that people can see and you start to overly editorialize what is going on, you lose the protection of what's called platform protection, where a platform is not supposed to do that kind of stuff. And they're not liable as to antitrust or basically a lot of other kinds of litigation under this exemption, as long as they present everything fairly. What you're seeing right now and are beginning to see in this country is a debate over whether or not the fairness of what is going on these so-called platforms is still provably so. And if it's not, they open themselves up to losing all of the legal protections that they have to say, you know, this just stuff happens on our net. If you notice the way that they try to defend themselves, they say, you know, we let everything in there. We don't have biases, whatever, you know, and that kind of stuff. And you know well and good that there are what they are really doing internally is saying, you know, we get complaints from people about certain types of content, and we're trying to keep the complaint levels down. The fact of the matter is they haven't really figured out, and we haven't figured out as a country, so there's going to be complaints about stuff, and if these guys are, how do they tell people, you know, like, no, you shouldn't be complaining about that. You should learn to tolerate that in a zero-tolerance environment.
So the big question, Dennis, is this. Is it time to regulate these companies?
Yes, but I think the attorney generals are on the wrong path. I think it is definitely time to look at whether or not the structural protections for fair platforms still applies to these companies. And if it does not, they need to be looked at from the point of view of should they become utility regulated more stringently than they are now.
So you're open to that?
Yes, of course.
I didn't know that. I did not know that.
You know, look, the internet changes once every 36 months, okay? And that's just the way it is, man.
So I didn't realize that. That's interesting that you were open to that. And you're saying, because that's what the question right now people are speaking about is, should they be really regulated as a utility company almost? That's the conversation that's moving forward fast that we really need to talk about here. Now, interesting position, people, when it comes to this Google and the antitrust laws and the protection that we afford. You know, again, how much government is too much government? Where's the fine line of all of this? Some of the conversations I'm hearing with Google is, let's make their search engine a public utility specifically, and then they can get a piece of that back, and other companies can share in the information, so they are unable to manipulate as much. Now, they can still manipulate it on their platform. Nothing's going to stop that. Let me be clear. But other people would get the data or the research results of that search and be able to do something with it. That's the question that you really need to ask yourself. We'll pick that up with Michael Johns in just a moment.
Our global experts are brilliant writers and engaging hosts on a mission of a lifetime. You'll find the latest news and inspiration on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
You don't want to overregulate anything, and I think that's a fair assessment. I hope most of you would agree with me, because the more you regulate, the more you get government involved, they just don't do a good job in this kind of a thing. But the problem is these companies have a massive lion's share plus of these industries. And the problem is they're putting their biases and their opinions and their tribalism comments forward in the privacy of their places, and they're fooling people, and they're an outright lying to the American people is what they're doing. You know, I've never been one to really support a lot of regulation, Michael, and support a lot of the big government apparatus here. I don't have confidence in that, but I am absolutely convinced that this is something. That's why we're seeing the movement to 50 attorney generals, and we're seeing everybody looking at this possible violation that Google is doing. I think it's a clear fact they're violating. But is that the path forward? If we look at the crystal ball ahead, are we going to start to, is Google one of the first ones we'll see to be regulated, and there will there be more to follow?
Well, it's important to realize that Google is regulated now. They have certain obligations. I mean, I couldn't disagree more that there's any similarity to, say, a voluntary political movement that someone can join and disjoin or be involved to the extent that they wish or not wish to be.
And how are they regulated now? Tell us how they're regulated now.
Well, all right, let's go through it. I mean, for one thing, they have obligations to adhere to antitrust provisions in federal law. So to the extent that they're taking initiatives that are suffocating to smaller competitors or collaborating in ways to on price and other key components of their business, that's fundamentally illegal. That's why you have all of these state attorney generals looking into it. That's why you have the Federal Trade Commission looking into it. That's why you have the Justice Department looking into it. And that's why you're seeing Congress increasingly engaged, because there are legitimate rules of law here that are concerned. Additionally, on the political bias, this argument that, well, they can just sort of have whatever views that they want to have. If you extrapolated that out to the sort of full meaning of it, mm-hmm. we could begin, say, turning people's electricity off because we don't like their political views.
That's right.
We could deny them a mortgage for a house because we don't like, well, you qualify, but we don't like your views. There are certain consumer protection laws that I think are going to be tested in this particular case, because Google is so completely monolithic, so transparent about their biases, and it's having such a profound impact on consumers. So those, I think, laws are also in place, and they're going to be tested as part of that. I think you also are going to see from an employment standpoint, our safe political conservatives and identifiable class. We all know that you can't say we're going to have a company that's comprised of, you know, all men or all white people or, you know, anything of that nature. You know, is it possible that you can have the 15th largest company in the country that is so intricately involved in crucial components of communications in this country say, you know, yeah, basically, we're not going to hire any conservatives. We're not going to put any conservatives in positions of authority. We're not going to listen to anyone who holds those viewpoints, even though in my history, those aren't subjects that routinely come up in work conversation. In this company, they do. They're part That's of right. what they call their core values. Their motto is, basically do no evil, which is somewhat ironic when you're dealing with one of the world's worst abusers.
There are no conservatives in their upper leadership here. They made very careful. Now think about this a minute here, guys. They made very careful to hire people that fit their Google values. Now think about that a moment. So their interviewing process was obviously over drinks at a local bar somewhere when they were doing the interviewing process of these people, Michael. This is like a clique. You talk about tribalism. This is a group. This is a tribe right here of like-minded people who want to take over what they consider the world in their view.
Right.
And am I right or wrong with that?
I think you're right, because I think, and I think the reason the video that you launched the program with is so important.
That's right.
Because I think all of us sort of before that video suspected that there was a level of this going on, that they more or less embraced progressive causes and mm-hmm. did not like and sought to suppress.
Well, we didn't have the evidence.
I honestly, even myself, my jaw dropped when I saw how transparent, how monolithic, and how this was at the forefront of their agenda. They didn't. That was not a conversation of, gee, well, how is Google going to succeed in this new political climate, this new regulatory climate? How do we adjust our business? That was about how do we win this ideological struggle that we view ourselves as a combatant in.
Big time.
That, I believe, is nearly unprecedented in the history of
so
American
industry. I got to ask you this. In your opinion, what you just described, and with what Dennis has said earlier, that was just a moment in time. Do you buy that?
I think I don't see any. I don't see any indication that these are agendas that are going away. I don't see any indication. They just kicked conservatives off of their advisory panel. They fired conservatives once they were outed at the company, who are now suing the company. I see that this is
it's getting worse, not getting better.
I see no indication that, hey, we're going to come back 10 years and this company is going to have, you know, kind of disengaged as a political activist. And that's kind of like what my, I think, core concern is that this company is ultimately a technology provider. They're not ostensibly or advertised as providing, you know, a political lobbying initiative on almost every issue under the sun. And yet that is kind of where they have chosen to be within that segment. And we did, and I think previously we described this management team as the owners, and they do have a large ownership stake in the company, which is also important to remember. This company is owned by shareholders who have a very broad ranging number of views. So I don't think it's even fair to say this extreme ideological bias reflects the ownership of the company. It's a minority viewpoint that happens to have developed a monopoly force.
Well, it's the people who
on
run
the management
it.
Team of the management team of the organization. So yeah, it's a couple dozen people, mm-hmm. and they're enforcing it with absolute, almost totalitarian power, and showing no indication. And I think what comes across, which is apparent to me as someone who's spent a long time learning and understanding various political ideologies, and especially American conservatism, is that they're not even fighting American conservatism. They're fighting their vision that they've created in their own mind of what American conservatism is. And so it's not even an accurate understanding. And I think that's what happens when you become so ideologically isolated that you're not even really talking with conservatives.
They're not
to understand
open.
What conservatism is. They're fighting an ideology they do not fundamentally understand. I agree with Dennis, on this one issue is that the other big regulatory battle coming down the line is, which he referenced, is this communication Decency Act of 1996. This was basically like the internet's coming into formation. It's being more broadly used by consumers. And this is like an under 100 word statute that basically inoculated all of these providers from any degree of liability on the content of it. So it said, hey, look, we're just kind of communicating this content. We didn't create the content. We're just communicating it. So as a product of that, Google, all the social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, et cetera, are not liable for any of the content that appears on there. So anything that arises, they could say the worst things about any one of the three of us, and we have no cause of action against the company, only against the persons who were involved in the posting. But interestingly, once you start determining who can and cannot appear on these platforms, mm-hmm. what ideologies are favored and disfavored on these platforms, who is going to rank higher and lower who's going to be sort of on the equivalent of the newspaper's front page and the back page. Mm-hmm. Now, all of a sudden, guess what? You have become a publisher. And at that point, I think we've reached the point where a good number of these companies, and I would put the big three, Google, Facebook, and Twitter, in this category,
that's right,
should have no longer have a basis to be protected under this Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act,
yep,
that inoculates them from all of this liability. And
that's,
I think that's
important,
kind of where Congress is starting, yep, and fortunately on a bipartisan basis,
yep,
Congress is starting to kind of see that, I think, as well.
What needs to happen? What's the game plan ahead? And how should we as consumers deal with all this and in our lives?
Let me give you the scenario that I think is going to happen, okay? Is that Google management has gone down a path where they have, in fact, are beginning to materially violate this Communications Decency Act. That was what I was referring to earlier as well. And they're going to get in trouble for it. And it's going to cause them to have to break up the company.
So you do think that will happen?
Yes, I believe that will happen. And I believe that the shareholders of Google will be very happy with it, because the breakup value of Google as separate companies is between 2 and 3 times the value now. So they're going to get very, very rich from what is about to happen to them.
I see. I see. So the idea, the subliminal message to that is buy stock, right?
Well, I can neither. I can
anyways, so you do believe that'll happen?
But I think that's actually what's going to happen.
All right. And will that happen to others as well after that, the Facebooks, the Twitters that Michael was just referencing, Dennis?
Yeah. I mean, you know, what's going to happen is these companies, if they want to keep their platform exemption, what they're going to have to do is they're going to have to become very, very transparent about how they are in fact still platforms barely showing things to everybody else. And so if nothing else, we are about to learn about the structure of how these companies go about ordering, ranking, and selecting. And
algorithms.
What does the algorithm really look like? And you know what? Is that such a bad thing for us to discover as people, as we start to mature ourselves on the internet? I think that's actually a good thing.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. Yeah. Every time that word algorithm comes over, I feel like I've got to take one for the team and bend over, Dennis. You know what I mean? Oh, there's an algorithm. Got it? Okay, we got it. It's like you just know you're being screwed over, you know, Michael? When, oh, there's an algorithm there. It's like a bad gnat in the middle of a night. You know, oh, another algorithm. You know, I mean, it's just such BS, Michael.
It's become, I think, in the minds of many Americans, a euphemism for, you know, we're going to enact and enforce our political biases and blame this sort of impersonal, faceless technology on it. But ultimately, I think, has been pointed out, algorithms have to be set and controlled and managed and overseen by people. So it's people who ultimately still are responsible. Yeah. I think that is kind of, Malcolm, where this is headed in the case of Google. Okay. There's such a conflict, obviously, between information gathering, which is one component of their parent company, and advertising, where, you know, we've now reached a point where 60% of digital advertising is going through Facebook and Google. And there's so many commonalities between those two and so many apparent conflicts and plenty of antitrust considerations and questions that Google, at least in the case of Google, they're likely going to be proactive in trying to inoculate themselves from government-imposed antitrust provisions and see what they can do on their own, because their ability to adjust this in ways that are acceptable to the federal government will obviously be more acceptable to them than it will be if it's imposed upon them. And then we have to be simultaneously conscious of the fact, which I think was referenced earlier, that regulation can be helpful and useful, and it certainly is necessary. It also can be immensely harmful. And one of the things that's been true in the history of regulation, it's always benefited larger companies at the expense of smaller companies. So to the extent that we impose all these restrictions on this behemoth, Fortune 15 company, and those are provisions that end up being applying to much smaller companies, the end result can be those smaller companies end up not being able to adhere to those regulations. They become unduly costly and burdensome, and those companies either go out of business or they're forced to sort of sell into larger companies. And so that's something you kind of want to avoid in regulation. The idea here is to maintain a healthy, competitive, free economy with reasonable competition within all industries.
Yeah, that's well said. Yeah, I mean, I appreciate you putting the flip side of that out there too. So, Dennis, I started the program out with that question. why is the right sleeping and why do the far left socialists own all the tech companies? And how would you answer that, sir?
I would say the main reason why the left owns so many more of the tech companies right now is because they are reeds in the wind. They don't have a core philosophy that they try to maintain. And where conservatives follow a fairly rigid well understood set of rules within that side of the culture, it doesn't translate into the algorithm of marketing and artificial intelligence and audience maximization and look to book and all that kind of stuff, which really you need to be a reed in the wind to win economically. So, you know, the way the technology stack is set up favors people that are kind of wishy-washy.
Okay. All right. Michael, as a Christian conservative, as a patriot yourself, how would you answer that, please? Why is the right sleeping and why do the far left socialists own all this?
I think in many reasons, but one of the primary ones is that the left has historically been real activists. They've gone out and said these are influence sectors. So whether it's technology in Silicon Valley, whether it's academia, America's universities and colleges, whether it's the media, TV, print media, et cetera, they've identified where these influence sectors are. Hollywood, obviously, another example. They've identified these influence sectors and said, we've got to go out and control this if we're going to win over the hearts and minds of the American people. Whereas conservatives, sadly, and I think this needs to change, have become what I guess you'd call almost reactivists, meaning something really bad happens that, you know, impacts the country in a negative way, impacts the conservative movement in a negative way. This is a prime example of what's going on right here. Now, all of a sudden, we start to get interested in it. But by the time we're interested in it, communicating about it, setting up some sort of strategy and plan to respond to it, we're already playing defense against a movement that is primarily offensive. I would disagree also that liberalism is some ill-conceived or not very clearly defined ideology. They're very clear about many of the things we're doing, that they're doing. We're clearly seeing that in the open borders area. We're seeing it in immigration. We're seeing it in, you know, taxation, size of government, regulation, on and on. These guys have a very clear cut agenda that they're seeking to impose on the American people. And they have one problem. They got this one problem. The American people, by and large, don't want it. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, how do they circumvent these tens of millions of Americans that are standing in the way of them imposing this vision on us? And I think in large part, that's how you end up with this amalgamation of problematic political biases, technology, you know, beginning to be technology monopolization, and, you know, real aggressive activities that are designed to advance their agenda.
Yeah, it even goes way beyond our technology companies. It's our education system. It's our university. It's our school system. It's our elementary school system as well, for that matter. And they have the voice out there. They own Hollywood. They own the megaphones. They own all the television. They own all the, how many times do I tell you this? They own all the newspapers. They own all the media. They own all the social media. They're running the schools. They have the entire megaphone to your kids. Then you all want to say, well, why do the young people like the socialism stuff? I don't know why. I don't have a brain as a scarecrow, man. I mean, what the hell do you think they have they like socialism for, people? Come on. Figure it out. You gave it all to them. They're running the entire program. I mean, why do you think the kids love socialism? Yeah, give me some more of that communism, Mom. I can use some of that. You know, what the hell is that all about here? Is there an agenda there or not? You bet your bottom dollars there is an agenda here. The liberalism is alive and well, and it is a disease. It's a disease of the progressive Marxist movement, of a globalist empire that they wish to achieve. I might not have thought that 10 years ago, people. I might not have thought that 5 years ago, but I damn well know what I'm talking about now. And they are at the head of the class, and it's gotten a little windy in here, Ma. Close the windows and turn the air on here. Can't deal with it anymore. People, it's time to get involved and get loud.